Bibles to Matthew chapter 2. Matthew chapter 2, this morning we're going to be looking together at verses 1 through 12. So we'll be picking up right where Brian left off this morning. Here we read, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him.' When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, 'In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet, and you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel.' Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, 'Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him.' After listening to the king, they went on their way, and behold, the star they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. Being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed to their own country by another way." The title of this message, simply, "Jesus Christ was born." Jesus Christ was born. If there was like a subtitle, it would simply be, "He is the King of Kings." These are truths. These are facts. Jesus Christ was in fact born. He is in fact and indeed the King of Kings. And the first thing I want us to look at is the reason for Matthew writing. And Brian did an excellent job in setting up the context and introducing us to the author of this gospel, of Matthew's gospel. But his reason for writing, just to sum it up, the overall theme or the overall, and again to set the context, is he is focusing on the fact and illuminating the fact to the Jewish people that, as the title says, that Jesus Christ was born. He is, in fact, the King of Kings. He's the King of the Jews, but not only that, he is the King of Kings. He is the Lord of Lords. He is King of both Jew and Gentile. He is the long-awaited Messiah that was prophesied in the Old Testament. He fulfills that. He is who he said he is. He did what he said he would do. And so he's pointing to him as the king. He is the rightful king to the throne. So this is his reason for writing. It's evangelistic. It is a gospel, so it's evangelistic in nature. And he's just proven time and time again, this is the Christ. He is the Messiah. This is the anointed one of God, the Son of God. And so that's kind of the overall theme of the book of Matthew and what he's doing. And to just kind of revisit what Brian introduced us to in chapter 1, he starts off with genealogy. Well, that genealogy is written to emphasize the fact that he has a right to the throne as the king of the Jews because he is a descendant of Abraham. He is a descendant of David. So he comes from the line of David. He has a right to this throne. And then we go to the last part of chapter 1, and we see that he is born of the Virgin Mary. This is fulfillment of prophecy. He is conceived of the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary. His name would be Jesus. Jesus, you will call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. And then we get to the end of chapter 1, and it says Jesus was born, and they called his name Jesus. So this had been done. Well, between chapter 1 and between chapter 2, is months down the line, probably even up to 2 years. So there's this 2-year space between the last sentence in chapter 1 and the first sentence in chapter 2. And so we've looked at his reason for writing, and now what I want us to do is look at the reality or the realities, the truths contained in these verses, this historical content or events that are recorded here in Matthew's gospel account. So these are realities, these are historical truths. And let me just go ahead and say in chapter 2, he's continuing to use prophecy and the fulfillment of prophecy to just reinforce the truth that Jesus is the Christ, that Jesus is the King of Kings. Old Testament, there are actually 330 predictions that concern the Christ, that concern the Messiah. And we saw where there's fulfillment of prophecy in chapter 1. He's continuing to build on that, showing his fulfillment of prophecy in chapter 2. And so what I want us to do is just walk through chapter 2 together, and then we're going to come back and look at some points and then look at some application, how this applies to us. And so we'll just walk through this together. So buckle down. There's going to be some information here. Hopefully not too much information. Hopefully not information overload. But it says, now, after Jesus was born. Again, this is 2 years, probably 2 years. If you read Luke chapter 2, you can see some of the things that had happened, like Mary's purification. Jesus would have been circumcised at this time. He's not in a manger anymore. We're going to see as we read this, he's now in a house. They're in a house. So there's different things going on. Some time had come and gone between the end of chapter 1 and the beginning of verse 2. And it says, now after Jesus was born. Now Brian already mentioned this, but Jesus, that name is Joshua in reality, or they would have said it Yeshua. Jesus, which means God is salvation or God saves. So even in that name, it's pointing to the mission that he came to earth to do. He came to save his people from their sins. He is Jesus, Yeshua. He is himself salvation, and he was born. Now this is a fact. Jesus Christ was born. We believe it because Scripture says it, and Scripture is inerrant and infallible and 100% true, but there are extra-biblical documentations of the fact that Jesus Christ, the Messiah, was in fact born. So that's not a debatable topic because he was born. And he was born in Bethlehem of Judea. Bethlehem, another name, Bethlehem, means the city of David. Bethlehem is where Boaz was from, it's where Jesse was from, it was where David was from, and it would be where the Messiah would be born. So, and it says he was born in Bethlehem of Judea, Judea being Judah. So that pointed to the fact that Jesus was of the tribe of Judah. He's the line of Judah. And he was born in Bethlehem, which we're going to look in a few minutes and see that it used to have this name Ephrathah. And the name had been changed, but it's specifying that it's this Bethlehem that they're talking about because there are other Bethlehems, just like there are other Fettes. There's a Fette, Georgia, and a Fette, Alabama, and a Fette, Kentucky. So it's specifying which Bethlehem they're talking about. It's actually 6 miles south, 5 to 6 miles south of Jerusalem, this capital city, where the king of the Jews would have lived or did live, the king of the Jews at the time, and I'm going to introduce you to him in just a second. Bethlehem also, just as a matter of trivia, means house of bread. And I think it's awesome that it's named house of bread because think about it, the bread of life, Jesus Christ, came from the house of bread. That's cool. Where better to be born if you're the bread of life than the house of bread? So he's born in the city of David, the house of bread, Bethlehem of Judea, of the tribe of Judah, in the days of Herod the king. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Herod. And there's a whole bunch of history and all. He's Herod the first. He's Herod the great. He's the first of many Herods that would come. Herod did have some good qualities. He did some good things. He built huge palaces. He built big temples. He built these big ornate architectural structures and pools. He was king of the Jews, but only by the fact that the Romans put him in that position. He had no legitimate right to the throne. He was not a Jew. He was an Idumean. He was an Edomite, and so he had no business being there, but Roman authority placed him in the position as the king of the Jews. Because he did not have a right to the throne, he was a very nervous man. He was paranoid. He always felt that people were trying to steal his throne, to steal his position, to steal his power and authority away from him. And so how did Herod deal with that? Oh, let me also say that he constructed the temple. He helped rebuild the temple. That was a good thing that he did, if you want to look at it that way. He did a lot of nice things for the people. He even helped the poor at times in when there was great poverty among the people. So he did some good things, but he was real jumpy that somebody was going to steal his position. And so when he got the idea that somebody was after his position of power, you know what he did? He took them out. He just did away with them. He killed his brother-in-law. His brother-in-law was a great high priest, and he had the high priest killed. He had his mother-in-law killed. He had his brother-in-law killed. Eventually, he had his wife killed. He had three of his sons, at least three of his sons, killed. So anytime there was any idea in his mind that someone was going to take his position of power, he would just take them out. So he was bloodthirsty. He was really ruthless. In fact, he wasn't light because he was an Edomite. He was not a Jew. He was not in a position to really be on the throne as the king of the Jews. And he knew that people didn't like him. I mean, you kill people left and right. Go figure. They don't like you. But he knew that people wouldn't cry upon his death. So when he was getting sick, he commanded the people to go arrest all of the distinguished citizens among the Jews, arrest them and put them in prison. And he gave orders that upon his death, they were to all be slaughtered. They were to all be killed because he wanted to guarantee that tears would be spilled on the day he died because he knew people wouldn't cry for him. So he wanted tears to be shed just so that on the day he died, he would know that people would cry. Bloodthirsty guy. Ruthless. He was a crazy man, really. And he guarded his position as king of the Jews. Had no right there. Again, that's what I want to emphasize. He was only there because the Romans put him in that position. And so it says, after Jesus was born in Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem. So now we have to kind of visit who these wise men are. And most commentators agree that because they're wise men, that they were all Auburn fans. Okay, y'all are still with me. That's a joke. They were wise men. They're called wise men, and actually, magi. They were magi. Magi, when we say that, sounds like the word magic. Magic, and that's where we get the word magic or magician from. It comes from magi. They practiced magic. They were kind of mystical. There's not a lot known about the magi, but they became known as wise men because they were so learned in so many different things. They knew about science. They studied astronomy, astrology, agriculture. They knew a lot about history. They were extremely powerful. Many of them were kings. They were actually kingmakers. They would travel around and acknowledge that, hey, you're a king, you're a king, and they would do that. And so I know it's kind of crazy, but when I hear magi, I think of Jedi. And they were a lot like the Jedis because they were Parthians originally. They were from this particular area, but then other people started to practice the art of the Magi, like the art of the Jedi. I know if you're not a Star Wars fan, I just totally lost you. But anyway, let's rein it back into Magi. They became this group of people like a religion or this quasi-pagan religion where they would practice magic. They studied prophecy. They studied history. And they would have to pass these things in order to arrive at the rank of magi. And so they were very respected and revered, even feared, because of the mystical nature and the power that they had. So they were priestly, because they knew a lot of scripture and sacred text, and they were powerful. And so they were like priests and they were like kings and they traveled around. And so you get this idea. And so these people are practicing Magi and they're scattered all over the east. But these specifically came from the east. And that word east literally means from the rising of the sun. And so probably Persia is where they were, princes from Persia or kings from Persia. And we don't know, let me just go ahead and say, we don't know if there were three of them. Chances are it was a gigantic entourage of Magi and warriors and other Parthian people. And so I want to paint the picture of troubled in Herod's mind, because he had just, in a war, in a battle, driven the Parthians out. And so now these people, these Magi, are coming probably with a large group of people. We preached on Esau coming, or Jacob coming to meet Esau. That was the last time I preached. And remember, there was this big band of people. And so we picture that. That's probably what's happening. This large group of Parthian, Persian people, this group of Magi, are coming marching in. And so there's... Herod felt troubled. He was troubled. We're going to see that. But it says, behold, these wise men from the east, they came to Jerusalem. Now, why did they go to Jerusalem if Jesus was born in Bethlehem? Well, they came to Jerusalem because that's where the king was. And they thought, where better to find the king than to go to the city where the king is? And he thought, or the wise men thought, well, that's, the people ought to know about it. I mean, good night. This is headline major news. The King of Kings, the King of the Jews, the true King that would be the eternal King, the Jews, has been born. So where better to find him than Jerusalem? So they go there and they're asking the question, where is he who has been born the King of the Jews? This is a continual verb. It indicates that as they're coming, they're walking by people saying, hey, where's the King of the Jews? Hey, where's the King of the Jews? They're asking everybody as they're going through Jerusalem. Now, let me back up a little bit. How did they know? How did they know to go? We don't really know. Did God appear to them in a dream, like, or an angel of the Lord appear to them in a dream saying, go? We don't really know. But they were being directed by God to go. Perhaps they were familiar with the Jewish prophecy or the prophecies of the Old Testament. We're going to look at some of these in just a minute. But it says, behold, these wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, saying, where is he who has been born the King of the Jews? Now, we get an idea of how they knew to come right here. It says, for we saw his star when it rose, and have come to worship him. They probably were familiar with the prophecy of Balaam in Numbers chapter 24, verse 17, where he prophesies, he says, I see him, but not now. I behold him, but not near. A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. So this ruler is going to rise out of Israel, and this star is going to come. If you fast forward to the last book of the Bible, Revelation chapter 22, verse 16, it says, I, Jesus, have sent my angel to testify to you about the things for the churches. I am the root and the descendant of David. We see that in Matthew. And then he says, the bright morning star. So he even refers to himself as this bright morning star. But we come back here, it says, they say, we saw his star when it rose. Well, what was this star? A lot of people speculate. Was it a comet like Halley's Comet or Hale-Bopp Comet that came a few years ago? Was it certain stars lining up in a certain way? Was it an angel? Was it a planet or something moving? We don't know specifically what it was, but chances are it was probably the glory of the Lord shining, just like it says, and behold the glory of the Lord when the shepherds are visited. It says, and behold the glory of the Lord shone round about them, and they were sore afraid, they were terrified. So it's probably the glory of the Lord, this bright light beaming, and they saw it. Now they saw it when it happened, so that would have been when Christ was born. They saw this star, they were familiar with these prophecies, and they knew, hey, the King of the Jews has been born. They were aware of that. They knew that. And again, we don't know if the Lord visited them in a dream and said, go and do this. But they knew it. They were aware of it. And so they come to this capital city to find him who's been born king of the Jews. They're asking everybody. And it says the reason they came was to worship him. They came to worship him. These are Gentiles coming to worship the king of the Jews. Do you see? There's a message here, right here. Jesus is not only the king of the Jews, he came to be king of Gentiles also. And so he was going to save Gentiles. We see that alluded to here. The Gentiles are coming to worship him. They're worshiping him by what they know, just like Joseph responds by faith to what he had heard from the Lord. These wise men are responding by faith. Somehow, some way, the Lord spoke to them to go, and they knew that this was the Messiah, the King of the Jews, and they go to worship him. And worship him means bow low. They were going to bow low in reverence and worship Jesus, the King, this child who had been born the King of the Jews. They had seen his star. They came to worship him. And so that's awesome that Gentiles are coming to worship Jesus, the King of the Jews. And then if you fast forward to the end of the book of Matthew in chapter 28, what does Jesus commission us to do? To go to all nations, to go to the Gentiles. And so cool bookends how that works there with this allusion to ministering to the Gentiles and how he's going to be Savior through Abraham, through his offspring. All nations would be blessed, Jew and Gentile. And so cool bookends to that. And how Matthew's working that out. And we see again this evangelistic story through his historical account of the events that took place in his gospel. But they saw a star, they came to worship him, and it says, when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled. That's his reaction. He's troubled. Why was he troubled? Well, I already mentioned it could have been this great number of people, and he's thinking, uh-oh, I fought them, now they're coming to fight me, or they're coming to declare war. That's a possibility. Maybe he was troubled because of that, but it says he was troubled and all Jerusalem was troubled with him. Well, why would all Jerusalem be in troubled with him? Again, it could be because they think, uh-oh, war's about to start and we're going to have to fight and that's trouble. Maybe this is trouble coming. But chances are they knew Herod and they knew when someone came to threaten his throne that heads started rolling, that people started dying. He was troubled, therefore Jerusalem was troubled. It's like, okay, they're probably looking at each other and saying, who's he going to take out now? Is he going to start just killing us all? Because he's a bloodthirsty guy. He's a ruthless ruler. And so he was troubled, and all Jerusalem was troubled with him. Now he's probably thinking, King of the Jews, wait a minute. This guy they're talking about is going to try to take my throne, so I'm going to need to take him out. And when Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, all Jerusalem with him, and assembling all of the chief priests and scribes of the people. Real quickly, who are the chief priests and scribes? Pharisees, Sadducees, Sanhedrin. You've heard all of those terms. They were people, that great high priest was the one who would enter the Holy of Holies. There was only supposed to be one. There were many. Why? Because it became a corrupt system. It became very political and corrupt, and people were buying and paying for positions to become high priests. There were multiple high priests. But they were the religious elite. They were supposed to be the people that everybody looked up to and said, man, I wish I was as godly and holy as them. They were respected by the people and revealed in that way. They had priestly duties. They had political duties. And then you have the priests, chiefs, and scribes. Scribes were like lawyers. They were very learned in history. And so when I say chief priests and scribes, just think priestly duties, political duties. They were rulers. Religious rulers, law rulers, they studied the law. The scribes were very familiar with Mosaic law. And so where better to go to get information about the Scripture and Old Testament prophecies than the scribes? You would think, go to the religious elite, and surely they're going to know, right? They would know something. And so Herod's assembling all the chief priests and scribes of the people, and he inquires of them, where the Christ was to be born. Did you notice that? He doesn't say the king of the Jews. Herod, in a roundabout way, as a pagan ruler, acknowledges who Jesus is. He is the Christ. He is the Messiah. He is the anointed one of God. He is the Son of God. He is the God-man. And so he's acknowledging that. So through Herod's acknowledging of this, that's just another reinforcement of the fact that he is the King of Kings. Jesus is the King of Kings. He truly is, was, is the Messiah. And so he asked where the Christ was to be born. And they told him, in Bethlehem of Judea, for so it was written by the prophet. Now they were familiar with the Old Testament. They were familiar with what was up enough to know the prophet that said this. It was Micah. And they quote to a degree in verse 6, Matthew quotes what comes from Matthew chapter 5, verse 2, or Micah chapter 5, verse 2, and I want to read that. That prophecy says, but you, O Bethlehem Ephrathah, and that was again another name. They dropped that name. It just simply became Bethlehem, Bethlehem of Judea. Who are too little to be among the clans of Judah, for from you shall come forth for me one who is to be ruler in Israel. Now that word ruler means he will rule with an iron fist. He will rule with an iron rod. He will rule, just dominate. He is an absolute authority. He is going to be a powerful, the most powerful ruler. There's to be a ruler in Israel whose coming forth is from old, from ancient of days. So he's eternal. He, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld His glory, glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And so this is incarnation. Jesus was born incarnation. This is who He was. He was God, Himself God. He puts on flesh. He's man. He's God. He's the God-man. And so this prophecy of old, they remembered. And notice here that Matthew adds, not only is He going to come in this absolute authority and rule it with an iron rod, He is going to shepherd His people Israel. So not only is He just going to be absolutely in authority, but He's also a tender, loving shepherd, a great shepherd. He is our great shepherd who came down, the great shepherd came down to lay His life down for His sheep. He will save His people from their sins. And so we see this tenderness. He is a loving, tender ruler, but He is in absolute authority. He's King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And then in verse 7 it says, then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. So he's doing the math, okay? 2 years ago. He's probably around 2 years ago. And he says, and he sent them to Bethlehem. So he's sending the wise men. Now the wise men know he's not in Jerusalem. They know for a fact he's in Bethlehem. So they're aiming back to Bethlehem, heading to Bethlehem. And it says, and it says, go and search diligently for the child. And that word child's not infant. So it's again implying he's older at this time. Search for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him. Isn't that sweet? Isn't that nice that Herod wants to go worship him? Don't be fooled. That's not the plan. Fast forward, look at verse 16 of chapter 2. Then Herod, when he saw that he had been tricked by the wise men, we'll read about that in a few minutes, became furious, and he sent and he killed all the male children in Bethlehem and in all the region who were 2 years old or under, according to the time that he had ascertained from the wise men. And so he was trying to take out any person that was going to rise up and take his throne. And he thought, if I kill everybody 2 and under, then by default, I'm going to take out this one that is King of the Jews. I am going to take out the Christ, the Messiah. So he says, he's trying to fool them. He says, y'all report back to me that I too may come and worship him. After listening to the king, they went on their way. So they're heading to Bethlehem. They're heading to Bethlehem. And behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. So the star had shone when Jesus was born. It had gone, and now it had reappeared, and they see it. Behold, they see it. And look at their response to this. It says, it was leading them now. It was moving. It was walking just like the Israelites in the wilderness where God revealed himself in a pillar of fire by night and a cloud, pillar of a cloud by day, where it moved. And so here it's moving and it's leading, and the star kind of like neon is saying, here he is. You know, here he is. You didn't know the town. Now I'm showing you the house. Boom, here. It stops. But look at how they reacted. It says it rested over the place where the child was, and when they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Not just they were happy. Matthew is saying these guys were clicking their heels, happy, ecstatic, overjoyed, doing backflips. They are exceedingly happy with great joy. They are so overjoyed. They're joyful because they know what was up. God was leading them to the Christ, to the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, and they saw that star. And so they rejoice, and going into the house, now he's not in a manger anymore, he's in a house. They saw the child, he's not an infant anymore, he's probably a toddler or toddling. And notice the wording here. It says, when they went in the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Matthew is very careful how he words this. Joseph's not mentioned. Why is Joseph not mentioned? Now, he's probably not there, but why is he not mentioned? Because the wise men, he doesn't want anybody, especially the wise men, to get the idea that he's the father of the child. Joseph is not there. And so, notice also who's mentioned first. It says the child. The child is there with Mary, his mother. This has huge implications because the child was who they were there to see. The child was the one that they had come to worship. They respected Mary by all means. Yeah, she's the earthly mother of the Christ, but they aren't there to worship her. They're not there to worship Mary. They're there to worship the child. And so don't pray to Mary. Pray to the King. Pray to the Christ. And so put your faith in the Christ, not the mother of Christ, because that's who they came. It says, and they fell down and they worshiped him. They didn't worship the mother. The father wasn't there. They worshiped the child. They fell down and they worshiped. They bowed low and they worshiped him. And it says, then opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. This giving of gifts was an extension of their worship. That's what true worship calls us to do, to offer sacrifice, to give gifts, to give praise, to bow low, to worship. Psalm 72, verse 10 says, may the kings of Tarshish and the coastlands render him tribute. May the kings of Sheba and Seba bring gifts. Maybe that's who the wise men were. Isaiah chapter 60, verse 6, a multitude of camels shall cover you, the young camels of Midian and Ephah, all those from Sheba shall come. They shall bring gold and frankincense and shall bring good news, the praises of the Lord. So maybe that's a reference. Did they come on camels? I do not know. It doesn't say the wise men came on camels. It does not say that there were three, because why do people think there were three wise men? Because there were three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But we don't know. Chances are there was a whole bunch of them. Again, I've already said that. But in the gifts, symbolism. Again, gifts of gold. What is gold? Gold is representative of authority, of king. Kings had gold. So this was evidencing his kingly authority in them giving gifts of gold. And it says, and they gave him frankincense. Incense was burned in worship at the altar to deities. And so this is given to him. Why? It's illuminating the fact that he is deity. He is God. And so it illuminates kingly authority with gold, deity with frankincense. And then they give him myrrh. Well, myrrh was a perfume or a resin, and mixed with other spices, it was used to anoint dead bodies. And so this was symbolic in that he had been born to save his people from their sins. How would he save people from their sins? Because the good shepherd would lay down his life for the sheep. And so it's symbolic of His humanity. He had to be a man to die. He had to be God to save. And so He is the God-man. He is God in flesh, veiled in flesh, the Godhead see, hell incarnate deity. Jesus, here He's come to dwell. Jesus, our Emmanuel, God with us. And so we see that in these verses here. And so they give Him these gifts, and then being warned in a dream not to return to Herod. So the Lord again is speaking to them, and they had already told Herod, okay, we don't know exactly what they told Herod, but probably, all right, we'll be back. But they honor God over Herod. They fear God more than Herod. They respect and revere God more than man. And so they go their own way, and they departed to their own country by another way. And so with all that being said, now comes the sermon. We looked at the reason for Matthew's writing, the realities contained in these verses, this historical content of events recorded in his gospel account. But what I want you to know, I want to revisit real quickly. You don't have to sweat it, it's not long. The reactions. Notice the reactions. Did you catch the reactions to these realities? The reactions to these truths that Matthew reveals here. Think back to how Herod responded to the news. Where is he who has been born King of the Jews? Where is the Christ? The fact that Jesus Christ was born, how did they respond? Herod, he responded in anger. He was alarmed. He was upset. We can use this word. It's a word that's overused in 2019. He was offended. That offended Herod. How dare the Magi offend him with truth? Truth is offensive. He received this truth with anger. These truths alarmed him. They upset him. They offended him. And then you get to the scribes and Pharisees and you think, the religious elite, surely to goodness, they ought to be excited with great joy, exceeding great joy that the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords has been born, and yet they are apathetic. Well, hang on a minute and let me dig back here in the old book of the law, the prophecy, and see what I can find. They should have been there with bells on. And not only that, did you catch the fact that Herod nor the scribes and chief priests sent anybody with the wise men, hey, we'll go with you. Nobody went. They sent them off. Now, yes, that's God sovereignly protecting His Son. And so God is sovereignly working behind the scenes of all this. And so we see Him working with the Magi. We see all of it. He's working His plan out, His sovereign purposes and plans out. But the scribes and the Pharisees, they're indifferent to this truth that Jesus Christ was born, He is the King of Kings. They were apathetic and they were unmoved. And that's tragic. It's tragic. But then, here come the Magi. They were wise. They were wise men. Why? Because they accepted these truths. Because they adored the King of Kings. They adored the God-man, Jesus Christ, the Messiah. With joy, they worshiped, they revered and respected, and they put their faces to the ground, they bow down and they worship. They worshiped it because they believed it. And their belief caused action. They acted on what they knew to be true. Their acceptance of these truths leads to worship. And so really, with all that being said, it boils down to technically two things. Unbelief, belief. Opposition to God is unbelief. Just denying Him or denying His truth or not accepting it as true and thinking these are lies or that He is a lie, that's evidencing unbelief. But the wise men receive these truths with open arms, and that demonstrates beliefs. Now, it doesn't say they believe, but they are hearing the truth of God. God speaking to them. They are responding in faith. And they probably kept up with the Christ child because they kept up with history. And they made people kings. They didn't make Him king. They just came to acknowledge the fact this is the King of Kings. And so I'm sure they kept up with the Christ child and watched Him grow up. But They were wise. They accepted and adored him and joyfully worshiped him. But that boils down to two things, belief and unbelief. And so here that brings us to this. These realities, this historical event, this content that I have just shared with you today, these realities, these truths remain relevant today. It's just as true now as it was then. Jesus the Christ was born. He is the King of Kings. He is the Messiah. And believing in His name, you will be saved from your sins. And because these realities are still true and relevant today, a response is required by each and every one of us in 2019. And so there's the application. A response is required. And so if you want to look at the three responses given by the people involved in this historical account, are you going to receive this truth in anger and be angry at these truths and say, those are lies, I'm offended, I'm not going to receive these, they offend me, I don't believe any of that? Or are you just going to be apathetic and say, well, isn't that nice, but it doesn't really affect me? Are you going to be apathetic? Are you going to be like the wise men and accept it? Accept it. So those three things, again, boil down to two. Are you going to not believe or are you going to believe? Are you going to respond in faith or respond in disbelief, unbelief? When I read this and I read these responses, these reactions to these realities, to these truths, I was reminded of a very popular argument. Now, C.S. Lewis did not, to my surprise, originally come up with this argument. But he made it more popular in speaking in 1942. It was later published in his book, Mere Christianity, in 1952. And he gives this argument. This is a very popular argument. You've probably heard of it. It's called Liar, Lunatic, Lord argument. Here it is. He says, I'm trying here to prevent anyone saying the really foolish thing that people often say about him being Jesus the Christ. I'm ready to accept Jesus as a great moral teacher, but I don't accept his claim to be God. That's one thing we must not say. A man who was merely a man and said the sort of things Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on the level with a man who says he is a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God, but let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about his being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. Now, it seems to me obvious that he was neither a lunatic nor a fiend, and consequently, however strange or terrifying or unlikely it may seem, I have to accept the view that he was and is God. That's fitting to Herod's response, the priest and scribes, the magi's response. See, Herod did not like the truths. He was angered by the truths. He may have not thought that they were lies. He just didn't want the truth. And so it's the same way. He became angered. So he thought lies. He would have been in the liar category here. The priests, chiefs, and scribes, they would have just thought, oh, he thinks he's the Christ. Isn't that nice? We know he's not. So he's just a lunatic. And they would be unmoved by that if they didn't really believe him, right? Apathy. So there's your apathy category. But then you have the Lord category, and the Magi would definitely believe in that because they believed he was who he said he was, that he would do what he said he would do, that he was indeed Jesus the Christ, the Anointed One of God, the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords, and they with open arms accept it and they adore him. So he is Lord and they bow down and they worship him. But again, that boils down to belief and unbelief. You have examples of unbelief and examples of belief. So with all that being said, that just brings us to this end, and it's simply be wise. Be wise like the wise men. Proverbs chapter 9, verse 10 says, the fear of the Lord, that is the reverencing, the holy fear and respect of the Lord, is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight or understanding. So the call is to believe, to come and adore Him like the wise men did, to call others to believe and to come and adore Him. And I just want to end with that first verse of the hymn, and I'm not going to sing it, but it's just, "O come all ye faithful, joyful and triumphant, O come ye to Bethlehem, come and behold Him, born the King of angels, O come let us adore Him, O come let us adore Him, O come let us adore Him, Christ the Lord." Brother Burrow, if you would, dismiss us.